Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 72. What if you survived a shipwreck?
I started fishing with Russ. We would go out and he would tell me what to do, and I would put the lure on and everything else and fish, and it's just, this doesn't seem like much fun. I don't know if I really want to do this. And all of a sudden I get a fish, and I battle the fish for about 25 minutes, and then I get the bug, and then I got it. I got to do it again, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. You know, when's the next time we're going out fishing, Russ? I was 55 when I started fishing with Russ, and every weekend on fishing season we would go out one day, and then when he and I both retired, we started going out two or three times a week. They're just filling our freezers with fish. He just had to go fishing. Whether he needed the fish or not, he would go fishing, and he really taught me a lot. Once you start doing something like that, you just start loving it, and you want to do it more. Especially when you go tuna fishing, and we'll be fishing for an hour and nothing's happening. And then once you catch one fish, all the other fish come up, all the other salmon or tuna come up, and they follow all of the lures, you know. And we have like five poles in the water, and as fast as you could pull them in and put your rig out again, and you get another one, you know. And it's just like a big drill going on. You're just running one right after another, you know, and then all of a sudden they stop. Sometimes they're in like 25 miles, but we have gone as far as 70 miles out looking for tuna. All of us guys got acquainted by, we have fishing boats out in Bodega. There was about eight of us, and there's three people that have fishing boats. And so we all, fishing season, like every year for the last 10 years, we'd all get together and go fishing somewhere. They became such good friends. We fish together, we go out, and we're out 14 hours fishing. You know, we leave in the dark and come home in the dark, and it's just so much camaraderie. The more you go out with them, the more of a friend they become to you. So year after year, we would look for some place. One year we'd go to San Felipe, and the next year we'd go to La Paz, and it would usually be like 5 or 6 day trip, or you know, a week. We'd always go to Baja. We'd never go anywhere else, you know, to get Dorado and marlin and tuna sometimes. And it's real good fishing. If you go out in the Pacific, you're getting the real big fish, but you don't get a quantity of little fish, so you're stuck with two or three real big fish. So it's better with being in the Sea of Cortez rather than going to the Pacific. So that's where we're fishing all the time, is in the Sea of Cortez. When we started the first time, it was only like $600 to go out, and we went down there and they told me how to tie a knot on the lure where it wouldn't come off. And so I learned how to tie knots when I went down there. That morning when we went out, the pole I was holding, it just bent over, and I fought that fish for almost an hour. And my t-shirt was, when I pulled the fish in, I took my t-shirt off and wrung it out. I was just soaking wet. And I opened a can of Coke, and I went to put my hands, the muscles on my arms were so tight that I put the Coke to my mouth and I poured it all the way down the front of me. And the fish ended up to be 127 pounds. And that was my first time. And this was 8 or 10 years before San Felipe. Don told us that he says, you should have went to the mothership. It was just so much fun, and you fish all day. And so the following year, he says, well, are you ready for it? And I says, yeah, I'll do it. So I did it, and we had so much fun. I brought back 90 pounds of fish just myself. We just had so much fun. And then, you know, that was only like 10 or 12 of us. And the following year, we had 27 people, and we all went down together thinking we're going to have a real good time, and got all of these guys together, you know, and everybody's excited, and we never got to fish. we went down the year before, and we went on the Eric, which is a 105-foot fishing boat, and it's called a mothership, and it goes down about 100 miles into Baja and drops off the Pongas, which are little 19-foot boats, and it has six of them on it. We'd go out fishing all day and then come back and get back on the boat, and we'd all tag our fish with different color tags, and then we put them in the ice room. And we had such a good time, and everybody got 50 pounds of fish in every cooler, and we had such a great time. There was 20 of us, so the following year we got seven more people, and so 27 of us caravaned down in trucks and SUVs and got to San Felipe, I believe, on July the 2nd. Everybody got settled in, brought all of our bags in and our sleeping bags, and so we were pretty much set and ready to go. And the harbor master came over and told him there's a big storm coming up, and he suggests that we wouldn't go out. He says, "I can't stop you, but we shouldn't go out." And the captain says, "No, I have a schedule to keep, so we're going out anyway." The Eric used to be our Norwegian icebreaker, and the owner brought it down to Mexico, and he sort of rigged it for the boat deck in the back, and then he put an ice machine, and then he put another deck on top, a little place for everybody to eat. And so it was pretty much like a fishing and a party boat combination both. The new guys will said, "Don't we get a safety orientation, like wear the life jackets and wear this?" And we took them down to the kitchen and said, "There's your life jackets under the seat, and you just got your safety orientation." And that's all we got. We didn't get anything from the captain or the crew or anything. So they drop lines and we start heading out. It was fairly calm. That night we were all setting up our fishing gear and putting new line on it, and we're up like at the bar and everybody's drinking beer, and we're putting new lines on, tying the poles to the rail on the upper deck. So the next morning, all we got to do is go up and grab all our fishing gear, jump in the panga, and then we're ready to go. I guess about 10 o'clock that night, it started getting pretty rough, and 20-foot waves and really, really heavy wind, 40 to 50-mile winds. So everybody went to bed, and about 2:30 in the morning, the anchor was banging and banging and banging, and I got up and I went outside in my underwear, and the waves were hitting the side of the ship on the port side, which really sort of alarmed me, because we should be going into a storm, not abreast of the storm. So I went and talked to one of the guys that were sitting back there, and he had the same problem sleeping. So we were just sitting there watching all the water come in. There was 9 pongas, and there were 3, 3, and 3. They were stacked. And when the top one filled, the water would run over to the second one, and then the second one would fill, and then it would run over to the first one. And slowly the back of the boat was going down further and down further, and about quarter after 2 in the morning, me and this other guy, Jerry, we noticed that the back of the boat was under the water. And we started the list, and I ran in, and I turned the lights on, and I yelled, "Get up, guys, I think we're sinking." And everybody yelled at me to go back to bed. I was dreaming. Just at that time, the ship listed over about 15 degrees, and everything in the room went to one side or the other. We were on the port side. That's where we listed over, on the port side. So when we came out of the door, we're pretty much underwater. The other side was up in the air. So those guys were going down over the side and down the hull. And they were pretty much trying to sit on top, thinking the boat was going to halfway float. So they start going over the other side and then getting coolers. And some of the guys were able to grab some life jackets. And I think there was only like 5 of us that didn't have any life jacket at all. As everybody's running out and jumping over the rail, the captain was gone and the crew was gone. And I was opening all the compartments looking for a life jacket. The boat was almost laying over on the side, and the windows start breaking in. I just ran out and I didn't jump in the water. I climbed up the side of the ship because it was laying on the side, because I remember seeing the life rings. And so I went up and I was going to try to release them. And there's supposed to be a thing when the life ring hits the water, a release, but these were all tied in with poly rope. So I was trying to untie it, and I couldn't get it untied, and I was yelling to somebody, give me a knife, and somebody that was over the other side reached in and handed me a filleting knife, and I cut the ropes all free, and by then the back of the ship went down, and I was still trying to cut the rings free, and the rings and I were both underwater. I got tangled in the ropes and everything that I was cutting, and when I cut the ring, both rings popped up together. And I swam up, and I broke my toe, and I finally got free, and when I popped up, I couldn't find the rings. And when I came up, it was pitch dark, and the waves were like 20 feet. And then I just started swimming and swimming and swimming. By the time I came up, the boat was gone. Everybody there had two 55-gallon coolers, and every cooler was floating. So guys were grabbing, I didn't know this at the time, guys were grabbing coolers and hanging on to them for flotation. And I thought maybe that's what I ran into, was a cooler. But then I could feel the rope on the ring, and then when I got close to it, I could tell it was the ring. And I tried to get on, and the crew, two of the crew guys were on there, and the rings were tied together. So they were trying to separate them, and they wouldn't let me get in the ring. I was just pleading with them. My arms were tired, let me in. And he said, no, no, no. He didn't say why, but later on I found out they were just cutting them apart, trying to separate them, make the two rings. While I was hanging on to the ring, something grabbed my leg, and I couldn't imagine what it was, and I reached over, and I had a handful of hair. And they pulled it up, and it was this little Asian kid named Gary, and he didn't have a life jacket either, and he just was swimming. He was underwater, and the only thing he could grab was me, and when I pulled him up, he grabbed a big old breath and just spit out some salt water, and he grabbed a ring too. So finally, they got the two rings separate. On the one ring that I grabbed, there was four crew and five fishermen on that one, and the other ring, there was nine crew. And then all the rest of the guys were on either a life jacket or hanging onto coolers. And then he started tying the coolers together, making like a little ring of coolers and stuff like that. And it was still really rough. And we couldn't get on the rings because they're only made for like two or three people. And there's nine of us hanging on. So with us hanging on the ring, the ring was about 12 inches under the water. The wind started calming down, and this was about an hour later. So then the waves were down to maybe 5-6 feet. We're all just hanging on with an arm. And then after an hour or two, we would switch sides because our arm was just, the paddling arm and the hanging on arm, all our muscles, different muscles were sore, so we would swap sides. After about 8 or 10 hours, our bodies start cooling down, and we're all shivering and shaking and everything else, and probably more of fright. We were afraid that we wouldn't get found and we'd have to spend another night out there. When we went in the water, it was like 2:30 at night, and didn't get light until 6. When I was on top of the boat trying to cut the rings loose, I kept thinking, is this the way I'm going to die? I just can't believe it. This is after everything I've been through, and I'm going to die doing this. And then when we were on finally did get on the ring, and it was dark, and it started getting light, and I could see how far the island was and how far the mainland was. I kept thinking, I got to do something. I can't spend another night out here. It was just so horrible in the dark and in the rough water and everything else. And I don't know what I would do if I have to spend another night just hanging on to this little ring, for another 14, 16 hours. Out of the 27, there was only five of us on this ring, five fishermen. And the other four were the crew. And then the other ring, when they split it, when it got daylight, we didn't see it. We didn't see anybody. We saw a couple of planes going over, and we yelled and screamed, but they were all too high. So we thought all the rest of the crew and fishermen were gone. Gary kept throwing up because he had too much salt water, you know, and his brother kept saying, don't worry about it, you're going to make it, don't worry, just hang in there. And then Lee in the back, we talked to him, and he was just, he was just grunting. You could tell he was just so far into it, he just couldn't believe where we were, you know, and he just wouldn't answer anybody. And then everybody was trying to boost everybody else's ego. You know, we're gonna get to that island. We're gonna get to the island. And then when the tide changed, we probably won't get to the island. We ought to turn around and try to go to the mainland. We'll probably have a better chance of getting people, because it was pretty a desolate area anyway. And we were told later that the captain originally was 15 miles out when he hit the storm, he started to go in towards land. And if he had sunken 15 miles out, nobody would have found us. Oh, he didn't have no EPIRB for the Coast Guard to give him a single. He didn't have one of those. He didn't do an SOS. He didn't do anything. He was just trying to steer the boat. And when he saw the boat was going down, when I ran in the compartment, he was going out and jumping over the side. And he was one of the guys that were on the other, with the 9 crew on the other ring. As it got daylight, there was a shark going around us, and everybody got a little freaky. And one guy had a gold watch on, and he noticed that the shark was sort of eyeing it up. He took his watch and threw it in the ocean. And then the shark just circled us for a little while. And it might not even have been a man-eater. It was just a curious shark. But it was with us for about 15 minutes. And then we're trying to pull our legs up tight so they're not dangling below us. About an hour, 2 hours after that, we got in a whole bunch of jellyfish, and we were getting stung in the legs. And so we're trying to, you try to move your legs like kicking, and then they won't bump into you. It causes a swell around your legs. The sun is just, I had a little spot of skin cancer on the top of my head about 2 weeks before we went there. And that, so I had a little shave spot, and I wasn't supposed to get any sun on there, and I got really bad sunburn right there. We saw an island, and we start paddling to the island, and the tide is, when it does change, it's really, really swift. So we start swimming to the island, and it looked like it was getting closer and getting closer, and all of a sudden it started getting further and further and further, and then we realized it was a tide change. So then we start going, we turned around, and we start paddling toward the mainland, which is 3 miles. We start paddling and paddling, and we're getting closer and closer. After about 5 or 6 hours of paddling, the tide changed again. So we start going back to the island, and we did this. There was 3 tide changes the whole time we were in the water. We didn't have any water at all. While we were coming in, one of the coolers went by, and we grabbed a cooler and had a gallon of orange juice, and we're all sharing the orange juice. So that was about all we had to drink. I figured, well, we're this close to land, we should have no problem getting rescued and everything. And then when you really look at the land, and it's so desolate, and nobody, and we don't know if he ever put out a SOS or anything at that time. I sure hope somebody knows we're out here, because we're going to be out here forever if nobody knows we're out here. We saw one of the pongas with 2 guys in the boat, and this was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were about maybe a mile away from them. We're waving at them and yelling at them. They're trying to paddle to us. They had found a couple of coolers, and they tore the lids off the coolers, and they were using the cooler lids as paddles. So we just kept trying to get close to them, and when we got within maybe 50 feet or 100 feet, one of the crew guys jumped over and had one of the poly ropes and drug our raft to the boat, and we pushed the ring away and then jumped in the boat with the other 2 guys. And so we started all paddling with coolers and stuff and trying to get to shore. Once we saw the panga and we noticed that they saw us too, and they started going towards us, we felt all pretty excited. Then we still had another 2 hours of paddling once we got on the pongas. And you get to the point where you can look down and see the bottom. You can see the rocks and the seaweed and stuff in the water. You figure, oh man, I know I'm getting close to shore when I can see the bottom. So I know I'm rescued now. And we finally got to the mainland shore about 5:30 that night, and there was a whole group of Mexican people, and they were having a family reunion, and they saw us, and they ran the jeeps down and picked us all up. As soon as we got off the boat, we couldn't stand up, as our legs wouldn't even hold us. We jumped over the side, and the water was like 3 feet deep on the side of the boat, and we tried to walk in, and we just our legs just collapsed underneath us, and we all just laid on the beach. They got us all in their jeeps, and they brought us to their house, and they gave us food and mainly water. We drank 3 bottles of water and fish, dried fish to eat, and jerky, and it was really good. The military came out and put us on the helicopter, and then they took us down, I guess about 3 or 4 miles south, and there was like a little village, and I think six more fishermen, came out and got on the helicopter. For being in the salt water so long, when we got rescued and when we were in the helicopter, the guys that were in the water, not the guys in the boat, but the guys that were in the water, their legs all puffed up. Me and a couple of other guys, our legs were just really like balloons from the salt water. The helicopter brought us right into the Mexican Navy medical building, and it landed just right outside, and we all went in, and they took care of my toe, and then they wrapped our legs trying to get the salt water out. That night, trucks were coming in with one or two, that people would find them, or a fisherman would find them. My one friend that I still fish with, he found an island house. He was out there two nights, and the fisherman was going by, and they picked him up, and they brought him to one of the little house on the island. He was completely on his own. He was just swimming for like 25 hours. He's just swimming and swimming and swimming, and when they picked him up, he just laid on the back of the guy's fishing boat and cried. And then the next morning, after the 4th of July, he showed up. So we were all excited and thinking, well, maybe the other guys have a chance too. They put us up in the same hotel that we stayed in the day before the boat went out. We would go to dinner, and everybody would crash about the first two nights. We would just go right to our room, and we had to keep our legs elevated up high because we were still draining the salt water out of them. But we were all pretty distressed, with hoping they were going to find the rest of the guys. You know, because the way they were coming in, like one at a time, and we think, well, everybody's going to be found. They wouldn't let us leave. We didn't have any passports, so for one thing, we couldn't get out of the country. They got a hold of the American consulate, and then even Hillary Clinton was doing something to get a hold of the government. Then she had written letters saying that we had been through a big ordeal, and please let us go through, and we got letters that we could cross the borders and get out. So we stayed there, I think, 4 days. In the hotel, and then I don't know who paid for it, but they fed us and you know, gave us rooms and everything else. They gave us an open line on the phone, and we all took turns talking home. I called my wife, and she says, what are you doing calling me on the phone? And I said, the ship sunk. And she oh my God, panicked. And I said, we're okay, there's a few people we haven't found. And then she goes, how's Russ? And I says, he's one of the ones we haven't found. When I woke up Russ, he says, I gotta pee. And I said, Russ, we're sinking. We're sinking. He just thought I was waking him up. And then so finally it dawned on him that we really are sinking, when everything in the room slid over towards him. And I saw him run out and go along the railing, the walkway by the railing. I saw him running down there. That's when the ship had turned over completely on a 45-degree angle, laying on its side, and they had a canopy over the top of the walkway. And me and everybody else surmised that when it turned over, Russ got caught in that between that canopy and the walkway, and instead of jumping over, you know, through the rail. And plus, Russ couldn't swim. Never learned how to swim. And he had his own boat. We'd go fishing with him all the time, and he never learned how to swim. the seven people that were on the boat are never found. They just say they're missing. Only one was drowned, and he had a life jacket on, and they found him on the shore the next day, and apparently he just gave up because he was paddling, and he was by himself, and so he drowned. Later on, they found the boat, and some of the Chinese people, they have to find something to bury. And so this is like 4 months later, they had divers going down, and they found the bones of one of the guys, and they did a burial with that. We went down with Russ in Russ's truck, and so Russ wasn't around, and the keys were on the boat, so they had a locksmith come and make keys for all of our trucks, and I had to drive Russ's truck home and bring it to his wife, and that was really one of the hardest things I had to do, because he wasn't coming home with the truck. July 3rd, everybody that has a boat out here, we all go out in the ocean and go fishing. There's usually four guys on each boat. We'll make a toast, and we've done that 3 years in a row now so far. 3rd of July, that was the day. One of the guys that lived in the East Bay, his daughter started a website called Find My Father, and they were sending people down, divers and everything else, searching to see if anybody was stuck on an island or marooned on an island, more or less. It was hard because you kept hoping they would find him. Just never found anybody after that. 90% of them, we had a funeral. We did one at a time. One was like 2 weeks later. Another one was like a month and a half later. Another one was like 2 months later. The one kid that lived out in Sebastopol, it was his first fishing trip, and we pretty much talked him into it. And he had a barbecue picnic in memory of him, and all his friends came. And there was two other brothers. One of the other brothers made it, but they lost one of their brothers, and he retired the week before we went down there. And that was his first trip after retiring, and he was one of the ones that got lost. A lot of the guys, like Dave, as soon as he got home, he sold his boat and he moved to Sacramento. He says it was just so hard. He went to Russ's funeral, and he sat with me, and he says he can't relive this again. He says it just goes over in his mind and over again, and he says, I just have to do something else. I can't go fishing anymore, and he would never go fishing. He sold his boat and just quit, and that was it. I went fishing as soon as, probably a month after I got home, I went fishing, and I was a little leery. The first thing I do when I get on the boat is look, where's the life jackets? For about the first 2 years, I couldn't sleep for quite a while. I would wake up at 2 a.m, and I would be thinking about it, and I just constantly would think about it, and it seemed to help to talk about it, instead of just putting it aside. I would talk to Dennis about it, and talk to Dave about it, and thinking about all the friends we lost, and how it happened, it's just so quick, and it's just, we're all having so much fun, and then all of a sudden, boom, just bam, like that, everybody's gone. The thought that I had was when I was in the back of the boat with Jerry, and when I realized the boat was sinking, as I ran around the deck to go to the cabin, I ran by Don, his cabin, and I ran by Al's cabin, and all I had to do was swing the door open. And I kept thinking, why didn't I do that? If I would have just reached out and pulled both of their doors and opened it when I went in and ran in to wake up all my guys that were in my compartment, we never would have lost them. I know if I would have opened it, they would have got out for sure, because they would have opened up right to the deck that we're running to jump over the side. So why didn't I just swing their door open? The last time I saw Dave was at Russ's memorial, and he says that the last thing he saw of the ship was when the lights were still on in the ship. He said that he saw the back of the boat going in the water, and I was hanging on the roof on the rings. And then all of a sudden, boom, the lights went out, and it was pitch dark, so I couldn't tell what happened. And he said, but I definitely thought you weren't coming back. He says, in fact, when we got to the island, he says, I think we... I don't know if Jim will be around. That's what he told me. And he hugged me. He says, and I'm so glad you are. We were all in something. We all think something happened, all of us at the same time, you know. And when you get people, 27 people that almost die together, you seem to appreciate each other a lot more.